All right, thank you. You may be seated. Good morning. We're going to start with the City of Littleton case, City of Littleton versus Industrial Claims Appeals. This is 2012 SC-871, and we've got three cases which are roughly related, so we said each one would be 44 minutes. You'll have to excuse us. That gives us each side 22 minutes aside. If you could keep track of your own time, we would appreciate it. May I have an entry of appearances, please?
Good morning. My name is Deanne Myers. I'm representing Brenda Dunn Myers, appearing on behalf of the City of Littleton and CTSI.
Thank you very much. For whose office, please?
Neil O'Toole, O'Toole and Sbarbaro, with Johnson Barbaro, on behalf of firefighter Mr. Byron.
Rob Hobson with Phil Hobson on behalf of Mr. Paris and the Village of Longview.
Thank you. All right, Mr. O'Toole and Mr. Hobson, who's going to be doing the argument on this one?
That's correct.
You will, Mr.
I will. I am only one on.
Okay, thanks very much.
Yeah,
thanks. I forgot to mention that Justice Hood is not here today. He had something that he had to do, but that was of a personal nature, but he is going to participate in this case. And what happens when he's not here is that he'll listen into the tapes of the disc of this argument, of these three arguments, but then we'll thereafter fully participate in the case. All right, I guess we're ready to go then. Ms. Myers?
Good morning. May it please the court. As I said earlier, my name is Ann Myers. I'm appearing here this morning on behalf of the City of Littleton and CCMSI, clients I've had the privilege to represent since the outset of this case back in 2009. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal if I might, and I understand that I am responsible for keeping track of that time. Today we address Section 841.209, a provision of the CAR, the Workers' Compensation Act, directed to firefighters, which provides that certain enumerated cancers are presumed to be work-related. The issue is whether that statute should be applied as it is written, as urged by the dissent of the Court of Appeals, as urged by the administrative law judge in the proceedings below, and as urged even by the Industrial Claim Appeals panel, or whether instead the law should be twisted and transformed so that it operates as an automatic reward of workers' compensation benefits to firefighters suffering particular types of cancer. The facts below concern firefighter Jeffrey Crist, who was tragically diagnosed with a specific type of brain cancer called glioblastoma multiforme. He claimed workers' compensation benefits under the presumptive statute at 841.209. My clients, the City of Littleton, contested liability, and a hearing was held before Administrative Law Judge Margo Jones in 2009. Under the plain language of that statute, the City was required to overcome a presumption of work-relatedness of certain specific enumerated cancers by showing that a preponderance of the medical evidence demonstrated that claimant's cancer did not occur on the job. The City did that through three experts. The first was Dr. Damick, who is a neuro-oncologist who has a clinical practice as well as a teaching position at the University Hospital. She testified at length about the actual medicine involved in glioblastoma multiforme with regard to the definition of carcinogens and how they are defined and impact the body. She was asked specifically to address the causal relatedness between the diagnosis of glioblastoma multiforme and Mr. Crist's exposures as a firefighter. She also went further than that and addressed putative and proven carcinogens that might have been in the workplace of Mr. Crist. She concluded that there was no evidence that these toxins that one would be exposed to either by inhalation or by dermal exposure, that those impact the brain. She testified that there is no known or putative carcinogen that has been definitively associated with brain tumor development in either humans or in animals. She testified that there is no data that inhaled skin or ingested carcinogens reported as the spectrum in fire exposures are carcinogen targets to the brain, or that these types of exposures would actually lead to concentrations within the brain. She specifically addressed the toxins and carcinogens which were identified by Dr. Weaver, the claimant's expert in the proceedings below, and testified that there was no evidence that these carcinogens target the brain or that inhalation or dermal absorption of these chemicals results in any level of carcinogen within brain tissue. The city also presented the testimony by report of an epidemiologist, Dr. Buffer. She also testified about a wide range of chemicals, and she also testified about ionizing radiation, an element that the Court of Appeals later found to be critical. She concluded that none of the chemicals described as associated with firefighting are causally associated with brain cancer. There was also testimony at the hearing by Dr. Javier Waxman, who is a toxicologist, who is a level 2 accredited physician under the state of Colorado rules for workers' compensation accredited physicians. He testified about the causation analysis that is endorsed by the Division of Workers' Compensation for use by level 2 accredited physicians in the workers' compensation system. He showed how the application of that analysis here to the facts established that there was no causal connection between the diagnosis of glioblastoma or multiforme and the workplace. He testified that the evidence thus far does not identify a single chemical agent to be strongly linked to that particular diagnosis, and that there is no association between chemicals and glioblastoma. Now, the administrative law judge entered her order in June of 2009, and she concluded that the city met its burden of proof to overcome the presumption by a preponderance of the medical evidence. She denied and dismissed the firefighters' claims for workers' compensation benefits. She specifically, and in rather ample detail, observed the credibility of Dr. Damick, Dr. Waxman, and Dr. Buffler, and found all of those experts to be credible, reliable, and persuasive. She showed why the testimony of Dr. Weaver and of Dr. Aronson, the two experts called by the claimant, were not credible or reliable, and showed why their analysis was faulty. In reliance on those experts, then, she concluded that the standard had been met, that the burden had been met by the city, and that the presumption had been overcome.
Now, I'm curious about one of those findings, which seems to be key. The substances to which the claimant was exposed did not target his brain, and the substances to which the claimant was exposed did not cause brain cancer. So what was the evidence that supports that he wasn't exposed to those in the course of his firefighting, wasn't exposed to those agents, particular carcinogens and so on?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, what the city assumed, I'm not sure I understand your question, but let me see if I am. What the city assumed was that the firefighter was exposed to the substances identified by the claimant's expert, but showed that those substances would not target the brain and would not cause his diagnosis of cancer. Am I answering your question?
Well, not exactly.
I'm sorry.
I'm talking about the findings in paragraph 7, okay, right? The substance to which the claimant was exposed did not target his brain. So how was the ALJ able to determine that he was not exposed in his firefighting career to substances that that target the brain?
Because of the testimony of Dr. Damick and Dr. Buffler and Dr. Waxman, who all testified that none of those possible exposures in the workplace, no putative carcinogen, no carcinogen targets the brain.
In the full range of whatever he might have been exposed to in his firefighting career, none of those.
That's right.
How does one arrive at that?
By looking at the medical scientific evidence to show whether there's biological plausibility, whether science has shown that these chemicals somehow reach the brain.
What do you know that's in a particular fire is my question. You know, it seems like the legislature has given the benefit to the firefighter on the basis that you don't know exactly what may be in that particular fire. I mean, there could be radiological materials in there, but you know, right?
And I'm certainly happy to address that particular point, that radiation, that ionizing radiation element. What you're, I think, referencing is the Court of Appeals conclusion that somehow the statute requires us to address endless possibilities.
Well, I think there is some kind of presumption that assumes that all these materials at one time or another may be there in a particular fire, but you can't really, you don't really know. So the benefit of the doubt, of course, goes to the firefighter.
And I think your point goes specifically to the presumption contained in the statute, which simply requires that the employer show that they were, that the cancer was not work-related. The presumption as written does not require definitive proof. It does not require overcoming the presumption by clear and convincing evidence.
Well, I think that's fair, that the cancer was not work-related, but the presumption is that it's work-related. So, and I'm just still trying to get it. And I understand what the majority in the dissent wrote in this particular case. I was somewhat surprised at the Industrial Claim Commission brief, because they reversed this one, right? They sent it back.
That's correct.
So they didn't, yes, they didn't feel that, that Littleton had met its burden, right?
Originally.
When they sent it back. So that's a little perplexing when you look at the brief that they submitted to the court in only one of these cases. The two other, they aren't there at all.
And as they indicated in the brief, I think, Your Honor, that they, their position has evolved, that they recognize now that the evidence presented by the city did meet that burden to rebut that.
Well, so why did they send it back in your case? There must have been some kind of doubt in their mind that Littleton had rebutted the presumption.
And they, I think in the original order, what they suggested was that the evidence was only general. And in fact, they concluded that the evidence in, only talked about the foundation of the statute, which is contrary to the actual evidence in the record, of course, as you know, that we did far more, even as the Court of Appeals recognizes, than challenge the statute. That was the initial finding made by the Industrial Claims Panel, that we did nothing more than challenge the foundation. Now they have found, through trying other cases, seeing other cases, that the presumption is as stated by and applied by Judge Jones, and that we met the met our burden to rebut that presumption by preponderance of the evidence. And Your Honor, that's the, I think the only logical interpretation of the presumption is that it at the outset presumes a work-relatedness that can then be rebutted by the employer. If we are to apply the language of the Court of Appeals finding that we have to really address endless possibilities, it really, it eviscerates the presumption itself, because it makes it impossible to rebut. The way that Judge Carparelli interpreted it and agreed with the Industrial Claim Appeals Panel's interpretation of it and the ALJ's interpretation of it was that the presumption directly, specifically...
Okay, here's my concern. I might as well be candid with you about it, because,
certainly.
You know, Denver's had radium sites, Rocky Flats spread plutonium material, arguably in the wind, all over Denver. Mm-hmm. How do we know that in any of these particular sites where there was a fire that some of that material wasn't present? It seemed to me that the legislature was putting a very heavy burden on the municipalities here to show that there couldn't be possibilities like that. And I just don't understand how, given that kind of background and the soils, Rocky Flats and that kind of thing, that there isn't a possibility that firefighters in our area have been exposed to these materials that might cause brain damage.
And in fact, Your Honor, that point was specifically addressed in the evidence below, although it was seemingly disregarded by the Court of Appeals. Dr. Buckler testified that the only doses of radiation which are associated with brain cancer, the only doses, are those doses that are present in therapeutic radiation directed to the brain and through an atomic blast. There was also, and noting that Dr. Buffer testified through a report, Dr. Downing testified that the only factor which is unequivocally associated with an increase in risk of brain tumors is prior therapeutic brain irradiation. So what we're talking about is a specific dose associated with therapeutic brain irradiation. That is, when radiation is actually, of course, targeting the brain, that that's the only dose which is sufficient to cause brain cancer. And that was certainly not in evidence here. In fact, as you will find at Record 301, Dr. Weaver's original report, which was part of the evidence determined and considered by the administrative law judge, Dr. Weaver's initial report specifically stated that there was no history that Mr. Chris had been exposed to ionizing radiation of any kind. So that fact was actually specifically addressed by three different experts and ruled out as being a source of Mr. Crist bringing cancer.
Counsel, you were just about to say what the burden on you was, and I'm hoping you can just turn to the statute and help me understand your interpretation of the burden that you must meet.
Your Honor, I agree. I think that it's most logically explained by both the Industrial Crime Appeals Panel and by Judge Carparelli. What they talk about is whether or not, and actually it's actually found in the Court of Appeals decision as well, if was there sufficient evidence to support the conclusion that this particular diagnosis could not be caused by the exposures suffered by the employer, by the employee, or was there sufficient evidence to show that this particular cancer was not caused by the exposures? So that, Your Honor, I think explains the presumption and how it is to be rebutted. And in fact, the Court of Appeals endorsed that position and then found that our evidence did not meet that burden when in fact it could.
And I guess that's my question. Do you think that the Court of Appeals, the majority, articulated the burden right, just simply did not apply it correctly in this instance?
Yes, Your Honor, I do. Because if you look at paragraph 33 of the Court of Appeals decision, it says that we were required to disprove, that the city was required to disprove either that the firefighters' exposures could be caused glioblastoma multiforme, or that the exposures did not cause his specific particular glioblastoma multiforme. So they looked at that, they said that's what we had to prove. They even recognized that we did prove quite a lot. The majority said that the administrative law judge could reasonably have found that if the claimant encountered substances, that they were probably absorbed by inhalation or through the skin, that there was no plausible pathway by which those substances could affect the brain, and that those substances don't cause cancer. The Court of Appeals set out, in paragraph 36, how we met the burden that they required us to meet. But then it went further to say that there was this requirement of meeting any possible cause that even could be imagined, and that there should have been evidence presented about ionizing radiation. Those were the two criticisms that they had of our case. One, clearly we did show that ionizing radiation was not the cause of this particular cancer. The other one is impossible to meet.
So in a way I guess you do disagree with the Court of Appeals in the sense that their own interpretation of the burden set it too high.
Exactly.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you.
So I know I'm getting close to my time being done. I want to note simply our basic disagreements with the Court of Appeals position. And one we've already talked about at length, and that is that they set a standard which is impossible to meet. And secondly, to conclude, which they did at the end of their opinion, that the ALJ had to speculate to reach the conclusions that she did in this case. By finding that, they reweighed the evidence. They obviously invaded the province of the ALJ in a very improper way by reweighing the evidence and determining that it was not competent and that it did not meet our burden of proof. The ALJ and the proceedings below showed how those experts were credible and persuasive and how their testimony supported the case of the city and thereby supported the denial of workers' compensation benefits in this case. Of course, we're asking for the order of the administrative law judge to be reinstated in this case, as Judge Carparelli did as well. But that's the appropriate remedy in this case. And we are reserving 4 minutes. And
I'm sorry, counsel, before you step away from the podium, could I ask a question? Could you perhaps briefly address the argument from a statutory perspective or a statutory history perspective that the legislature was not, in fact, making a legislative finding that cancers are caused by exposure versus this causation connection?
I know that argument has been made, Your Honor, and it doesn't really match with the legislative history or with the actual language of the statute. That, as I said, the presumption could have been crafted in a much different way that showed that that all-encompassing presumption that you just talked about.
And I guess I'm just wondering, how did the majority of, in the Court of Appeals opinions, they seem to arrive at that conclusion, and I'm just wondering what that's tethered to, at least in the statutory history, legislative history.
I don't find it tethered to anything in the legislative history. In fact, most of the legislative history that's been cited, even the citations made by the panel, show that the legislators were talking about this statute effectively simply switching the burden of proof, and that was all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I've reserved 3 minutes and 33 seconds. Thank you.
Thanks for your motion, Mr. O'Toole.
Thank you.
Counsel.
Members of the court, counsel, I'm going to start by a simple recitation of a statement in the petitioner's brief. It says, by requiring an employer to prove that which is impossible to prove, the majority, and of course referring now to the Crist decision, has extended the presumption far beyond its plain terms. Interesting. An admission in almost every one of these cases I've done is overcoming the burden of the statute, at least as defined by the court in the Crist case, is impossible. What is being attempted to be done is to place that burden back on the firefighters that the legislature needed to protect, and making them have the burden which is impossible to shoulder. There's very little discussion in the various briefs that address this matter concerning the legislative history, and almost no discussion about the fact that there was an extensive, and I mean extensive, disagreement with the statute. There were experts that testified to the Colorado Municipal League, the City of Colorado, the City of West Colorado Springs, City of Westminster. Pinnacle Insurance had two. Javier Waxman, that the respondents had relied on. I'm sorry. Petitioners had relied on at the hearing. And he testified against the statute. Now, let's deal with a great statement, I think, a statement I agree with clearly. The evidence wasn't that these things or these chemicals couldn't cause brain cancer. It was that there was no putative known connection. And in his majority opinion, Judge Russell stated, and it's probably an opinion, a statement you would agree with, the absence of medical evidence linking a known carcinogen with a particular form of cancer simply represents a void of information and cannot be considered proof of a reasonable link doesn't exist. Our position throughout, and we put this in our briefs at various points, is that medical science is a developing form, and it has developed dramatically already. I think back to the movie Sleeper, some of you may have seen, when Woody Allen character wakes up in the morning to open a newspaper to find out that cigar smoking and eating chocolate is good for your health. Now, in this particular case, we don't know what's going to happen in the future.
Well, here's the problem, as I see it, and I certainly think that the presumption can be rebutted by preponderance of evidence. That's what the legislature said. It says medical evidence.
Medical.
So it doesn't talk about what evidence may exist in the future when something is discovered. It talks about something that can be ascertained in a hearing based on the current medical evidence. Isn't that right?
It doesn't say current either. It says that preponderance of medical evidence. It may be that the burden is difficult to overcome at this point. I think the statute lives. I think it's meant to proceed into future generations. That is our position. We take the position that there could be changes. We had this whole discussion, as you know, in two cases coming up on risk versus cost.
Well, we deal in the law, sir, at a case at a time. Right. This refers to medical evidence in a particular proceeding, right? In which findings of fact can be made.
Well, right. There was the medical
evidence. Do you agree with that or not? What is the ALJ called upon to do?
The ALJ is called, and unfortunately in this case, the ALJ then saw the light after the reversal and changed her opinion, but was called upon to apply the presumption in the intent of the legislature. She didn't do that. She viewed it as a garden variety work comp case where the burden is on the plaintiff or claimant, and that burden, of course, was shifted in 1991 by Senate Bill 218 to be an equal burden. That's under Section 8-43201. Now, she missed that whole point about the presumption and its intent, and that's what the ICAL held her short on. So, well, you know, when you get a situation where we have a presumption of causation, which is what we have here with the legislature, and then we have testimony disputing the scientific validity of the causation, the intent of the city of Littleton, which it was unable to achieve at the legislative level, is to change the direction of the legislation.
Mr. O'Toole, may I interrupt? You had a good stopping point. May I ask a question, please, sir? I'm going to ask a question, if I may, please.
I know.
Okay. Can you hear me? Okay, I couldn't tell you're in here now. At paragraph 101 of Judge Russell's opinion, he says, the problem with this case is not that the lawyers didn't do a good job on the Littleton side, but rather the problem is they had no way of obtaining the evidence. They just couldn't. There was no way that they could come up with the evidence which they would have to be able to come up with in order to rebut this presumption. In essence, I think what Judge Russell was saying is that this burden is just impossible to rebut.
Come back to my response to Justice Hobbs.
Please.
I agree. But at the same time, the legislature, Servo, made it clear that the firefighters could never meet this burden, and Weaver said the same thing. We only had one oncologist, Dr. Aronson, who said yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. So is it your position that, yes, in fact, this burden cannot be rebutted, but that, in fact, was the legislative intent?
It is our position that at this point, since all the experts have acknowledged that it's impossible to determine the cause of a particular cancer, that the burden is very difficult at this point, but may eventually not be so insurmountable.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that. And I just want to ask a couple more questions to sort of hone in. So you're saying at this point in time for your client, or at this point in time for any firefighter?
For any firefighter who falls within the five systems, and those five systems of cancer that are addressed exclude numerous others.
Okay.
So you're...
I'm sorry, I know if you want more, I have a specific, couple of specific ideas. So what you're saying then is that at this point in time, assuming these kinds of cancers, there is just no way that this presumption can be rebutted.
I would say to you in response, at this point in time, it hasn't been done because nobody has been able to overcome a presumption of causation as established by the legislature.
And Judge Russell seems to say that he thinks there is no way of doing that.
You know, I think he's saying several places it's very difficult and near impossible. I don't know that he's saying it's never going to happen. I'm not saying it's never going to happen. I'm saying right now we have a presumption of causation. It is rationally based because it's relied on, if the legislature relied on the opinion in, meta-analysis of LeMasters, and relied on the testimony of the expert before, and rejected those who did not want the presumption.
All right, thank you.
Make a turn here. I guess what's bothering me a little bit about the Court of Appeals opinion is not so much a question of where medical science is right now, but rather a question of what we mean by a presumption and what we mean by preponderance of the evidence. Now, the legislature makes real clear here, I think, in the statute, I think you all both said it, that this presumption has to be overcome by a preponderance of the evidence. typically, when we say by a preponderance of the evidence, don't we mean something in the nature of it's more likely that it was not caused by work-related than that it was caused by work-related? When, in the court of, is it fair to say the Court of Appeals opinion at least lends itself to the suspicion that they were requiring overcoming the presumption by a virtual certainty?
First, Your Honor, I would disagree with the concept that it said preponderance of the evidence. It said preponderance of the medical evidence. Very important distinction is related to the fact that the experts that are supposedly presenting medical evidence failed, objectively failed to show what caused the cancer.
Now, do they have to show what caused it, or do they just have to show by medical evidence that it was more likely than not that it was not caused by a work-related?
In the context of a legislative enactment, their scientific opinions that the legislature was all wet by saying that these five cancer systems or systems affected by cancer should be covered, they're just wrong. They're trying to assume a legislative power, and exactly what the city of Littleton wants you to do, despite what the legislature says. They haven't been able to do it with the evidence.
How would you describe the level of certainty to which the medical evidence has to rise then?
In a case that's not before this court? Do you want me to speculate, which is
you seem to be disagreeing with the proposition that by a preponderance of the medical evidence means they only have to show that it's more likely than not that it was not.
Let's say there is a development in the area of genomic testing. And let's say there's a determination that a particular exposure, I see a spot where this case could be overcome? Yeah. An individual, potentially, works in an office with no exposure to any of these chemicals, and is a firefighter. Well, he falls under the presumption because he's been a firefighter long enough. And it's might be possible. Of course, I'll argue to death against it, but it might be possible that they could mount adequate medical evidence to show that there is another cause. For example, smoking, respiratory, which is not covered. It's endocrine, not covered. I know I've been through these cases and analyzed them, and yeah, the medical evidence is it's not covered cancer. It's a very important distinction. These things are limited. It's not like it's a fraud covering all firefighters for all.
Yeah, I think it's difficult to understand from the language given us, which is what we have to construe, that the legislature was really making scientific or expert determinations. I think that the logical reading of the statute is that they were looking for medical evidence in the proceeding before the administrative law judge to actually determine whether this preponderance was met. Now, is that a common sense construction of what they did? Certainly, these legislators don't sit up there and determine what the cause or source of cancer is, do they?
Justice Holmes, I read I've gone over the legislative history. It's that thick, you know that. I've attached it to various briefs. Long and short of it is, they were given medical testimony by Waxman and other individuals who disputed Dr. Fox. There were numerous people saying this presumption is not scientifically valid, and they rejected that.
Well, you're saying there's an ambiguity then in this language that allows us to look at that legislative history?
I think it's the context of the passage of the statute which must rely on an interpretation of what the legislature intended. That's all. You may be saying something a little more sophisticated than my answer, but...
I'm just trying to apply the... canons of statutory construction, let's say we start with the plain language first. And we don't get into the legislative history unless there's an ambiguity. So I'm asking you where the ambiguity in this statute is. The language in front of us.
If there's an ambiguity in the statute, it's a presumption of causation where there's a reference to a preponderance of medical evidence which thus far doesn't reach the level of overcoming causation. that's where the ambiguity is. You might say that is where the confusion is caused. That's how I see it.
Mr. O'Toole, good morning.
Good morning. So specifically, would you require then the city of Littleton to bring in a doctor to say, this is caused by X? I mean, something non-work related. I mean, in practical terms, what would the testimony have to be to overcome this presumption?
The city of Littleton would have to present evidence, given the nature of this cancer, that they have been able to exclude other causes other than firefighting, and that firefighting itself did not cause or exposure to these radicals which caused the problem that we're dealing with. So I place on them a pretty high burden.
But I mean specifically, so the doctor would have to come in and say, what?
Well, you know, I have a bunch of respondents, counsel. I think that's their problem. It's not the firefighters' problem. And I don't know what they could do, because they haven't done it in any of my cases.
Well, I mean,
that's the hearing level.
So what I'm, for example, would the doctor have to come in and say, this is genetically caused by X, to overcome the burden?
And even then, they've done that. It's more likely that there is a genetic cause or relationship of risk factor to prostate cancer. Major firefighter prostate cancer. We don't have it up here right now, but what's happened is that genetic predisposition doesn't equal causation. So it's hard. It's very difficult. And I'm not suggesting that it should be made any easier by this court. In fact, it shouldn't be, because that's not what the legislature intended, and that's why the legislative history is important. That's our position.
All right. Thank you, Mr. O'Toole.
I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Toole. Ms. Myers?
I'd like to address the arguments made by Mr. O'Toole. I think that it has to be assumed that he has basically conceded that the way he has interpreted the presumption in the statute is it is irrebuttable. And that's not what the statute says. The plain language of the statute permits an employer to mount a defense to a claim of an occupationally related cancer under this statute. The legislature, and as I think Justice Hobbs pointed out, no one has found, no agency, no court has found this statute to be ambiguous, so there is no reason to look to the legislative history. But if we do look to it, as cited by the Industrial Claim Appeals panel, the legislators intended only to switch the burden of proof, simply and plainly. There is no language in the statute that requires the employer to prove a different cause. There is no language in the statute that requires an employer to address an endless possibility of speculative causes.
Well, you would agree, however, that burden requires more likely than not that it's shown that it was non-occupation related.
Absolutely.
That this particular person's brain cancer was non-occupationally related.
Yes, Your Honor.
Which means they have to assume all the types of exposure that the firefighter could have experienced in his or her lifetime, right?
I believe, Your Honor, that the presumption has to be interpreted so that there is a means of defending against it. And the way that the Court of Appeals has interpreted it, there is no means of defending against it.
I'm just asking this now.
And I don't believe that the statute...
You do have to rule out occupational-related exposure.
And we did, yes.
And you're claiming your evidence did.
Yes. I do not believe, when I say that you have to rule out work-related exposures, I'm not saying that that somehow we can infer that the legislature meant that we should address any possible, near speculative possibilities of anything that might have happened, as the Court of Appeals has asked us to do. the presumption is a logical one that allows a defense to be mounted. And that has been done in this case with a preponderance of credible and persuasive medical evidence. As Judge Carparelli has stated, based on the evidence that we presented, the ALJ could conclude that thorough and well-designed scientific research has looked for a causal connection between the risks to which a firefighter is exposed and glioblastoma multiforme and has found no causal link. And by doing that, the city met the burden of the statute, the clear language of the statute, met that burden, overcame that presumption by a preponderance of credible and reliable evidence, and did what the statute was intended to accomplish. I think that interpretation of the presumption is reinforced by Judge Carparelli, by the Industrial Claim Appeals Panel, and by the...
Well, let's take your case now when it goes back to the other side for them to get back on and respond. What would they have to show to rebut your evidence?
They would have to show that our experts were not credible or persuasive. They did not.
Or that in a particular circumstance, this firefighter was involved in some kind of a fire where these materials were present or whatever.
Right?
I mean, there has to be an ability to respond to the evidence, right?
Yes. I think both fundamentally, though, and the requirement is to show that the experts presented by the city were not credible, that there were flaws in their analysis, that they did not reason well, that their analysis was not unbiased and unprejudiced. That did not happen here, according to the administrative law judge. These experts testified credibly and reliably. I believe my time is up, Your Honor.
Yes, if there are no further questions.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for your attention and consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Myers, and thank you also, Mr. O'Toole, for your arguments.